A lot of stuff coming down the pipeline here. We've got some basketball stuff. A disappointing day if you're a Syracuse fan. You lost one of your own, one in your own backyard. No JJ Starling. We'll discuss him and a couple other recruiting notes from the past week. We've also got some ACC Media Day stuff as well. Jim Boeheim with some very encouraging comments about the center. We don't get that very often, so we'll dive into some of those. And then we're going to rank the most winnable games remaining on the Syracuse football schedule because, listen, you need three to get to a bowl game, and we're going to kind of broach that topic as well, but what are the most winnable games for Syracuse? I think it's a good topic, so we'll get into all of that and a lot more. Locked On Syracuse podcast coming up next.
You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on in and happy Wednesday to all of you here. This is the Locked On Syracuse podcast. I'm Tyler Aki alongside Tim Leonard. Check out the show on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. We're always tweeting along fun stuff with you guys every single day. We've also thank you for making Locked On Syracuse your first listen every single day. Locked On Syracuse, free and available on all platforms. That includes YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the show there. We're going to get you some of those interviews as well. We've been teasing it for a while. I think this is the week, though. We're finally going to do it.
I think this is it.
We're finally going to break through. So let's set a date. This weekend, Cole Swider, all right? The old Cole Swider interview, that'll be up on the YouTube channel this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. Let's dive into the big news of yesterday, and that is J.J. Starling picking Notre Dame. He was down to a Final Five. That included Syracuse, but it hurts when you lose a kid from Baldwinsville. But it never seemed like the interest was there. And I don't want to say – maybe I should rephrase how I say that, but the fact that he was the hometown kid never seemed like it was an intriguing selling point for him.
Yeah, I mean, you heard comments early on in that process for him saying, I'd maybe want to go outside of home. And the other thing to consider here is that he's been playing at La Lu the past, at least this past year, and maybe multiple years. I can't remember the exact timetable there, but La Lu is right next to Notre Dame if you're playing that game. So he's a hometown kid, yes, but all these kids move out and play at prep schools, and they're on the move constantly when you're a top 30 kid in the country. It does hurt because he's quote-unquote a hometown kid. He's a really good player, but at least Syracuse, we know, did everything they could here. He did visit the school twice. I don't think he visited any other school more than once. Now, maybe that was partially because you go to
Syracuse. I believe Notre Dame, I think there were a lot of quote-unquote unofficials to Notre Dame.
Okay.
That took place.
Yeah,
So
however he did it, he gave Syracuse a pretty thorough look. They were right there. They were on him early. It seems like they did all the right things, but Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of guards there. And I think that was a big reason why he picked Notre Dame, because he's going to get the ball right away there.
Right. And right now, the roster as it is, a lot of older guards that are on the roster right now. So he's going to be able to step in, play right away once he does get to Notre Dame. I don't know if that opportunity is necessarily going to be there at Syracuse. And I'm sure JJ thinks he's a kid that can be one and done. I mean, all these top 40, 50 kids think they can be.
Right. He's probably gotten some pro offers, you would have to imagine. It seems like other guys in his range have. I saw Dominic Barlow recently has officially signed a pro deal. I guess not that recently, but he was another guy that Syracuse was after in the cycle. And when you look at the rankings, JJ Starling, who had a great Peach Jam. We talked about that a lot. It seems like if you do well in Peach Jam, that brings some offers. So I don't know if it was officially out there for JJ Starling, but if you're as good as him, you're considering how quickly can I get to the NBA? And that's what he should be considering. It's a bummer because now we got to play against him. And well, it's going to be kind of cool for him, I'm sure, to play in the dome and come home. And there will be a lot of fans and support there on his end. It just feels like that's going to be another one of those coming home stories, and he burned Syracuse in the dome, and then it's like all these articles about how Syracuse didn't get him. Like, I'm just terrified about that.
It's the next Kevin Herter, Jordan Wara, one of those guys that people are just – Isaiah Stewart. I guess Isaiah Stewart never played against Syracuse, but you see him go and be a first-round pick, and what was he? He was all-rookie team this year in the NBA. So what's your frustration level with not getting JJ Starling?
Well, the thing is, nowadays we just know, right? Like, this crystal ball comes out. I think there were three or four today alone, or maybe yesterday. Yeah. I can't remember the exact timeline. But by the time that he was making his announcement, I'm not even watching the Instagram. And I know some fans are probably just holding out hope. And I know the Instagram had some technical difficulties, which is kind of a bummer for him. But yeah, I don't feel much because we know these days. And I had kind of already ruled it out once I saw the Duke crystal ball come in. And then it seems like Duke got some guys at his position in his class. And I think that's a big reason why he picked Notre Dame, just based on when you look at what the schools have to offer and why he went there. But I'm
but
not
when you look at it from a broader scope in terms of not necessarily a shock value right now in the moment, but from a broader scope of the class as a whole, not getting a guy like JJ Starling from Baldwinsville right in your backyard, the frustration level, what is that for you?
Yeah,
top 50 kid too.
Right. I mean, it's high when you think of it that way, right? It has to be high because it feels like this is a guy that maybe Syracuse would have gotten back in their heyday, quote unquote, in the Big East days when they were recruiting top 30, top 50 kids very consistently. This class is shaping up to be a pretty high volume class with some good pieces, some good players I like. But outside of it being maybe one or two players deeper than a normal Syracuse class, I don't really see it being anything that is sort of quote unquote bringing us back to the glory days. It looked like it at one point when we had Kamari Lanz or when we had Dior. Now, as we sit here, I like Chris Bunch, who's still on the table. We'll talk about him. Malik Brown, I like him. But I mean, this is a pretty standard Syracuse ACC class right now. And JJ Starling missing out on him when he is quote unquote from your backyard does hurt. I mean, if you had told me like 3 years ago that there's a kid from Baldwinsville who's a top 30 player, I think I would have been frustrated if I found out that he picked Notre Dame over us. So yeah,
I remember
looking at it more broadly.
I remember when I was in school, I went to go announce a high school basketball game one time, and it was Baldwinsville, and I think they were playing like Liverpool or something like that. And there was this freshman playing on Baldwinsville. I'm like, damn, this kid's pretty good. Like, yeah. I don't know if he's gonna make his way to Syracuse. And then I looked, it was like, oh, he's a freshman. Like, he's gonna play Power Five basketball. If he's this good and he's just a freshman starting, I think he had like 28 points or something. He had a really, really strong night that day. And you could tell he was a little bit different than the rest of the cats out there at that point. But my frustration level in general with this one, yeah, it's high. And I felt like this was the one piece that you wanted to complete the class. Like if you got a JJ Starling here, you feel really good about this class as a whole. And now you're kind of left picking off the scrap heap to a degree. Obviously, that can all change with the transfer portal and how that shapes up in the springtime. But I really would have liked to have JJ Starling. And to the degree where I would have said, almost push all your chips in for JJ. And if you don't get him, I'm cool trying to go through the transfer portal with everyone else.
Yeah, there's not a quote-unquote headliner, not a McDonald's All-American candidate right now in this class for Syracuse. I suppose that could change, but it feels like it's not going to based on what else is out there at this stage. Maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe Mike Bray leaves Notre Dame and he decommits, but it seems unlikely, and we can't really count on that. At this stage, it seems like he's going to Notre Dame. And, yeah, it's a bummer because when you think about guys that have been very solid players and that have been local to Syracuse, we usually get them. The Daywon Colemans, the Brandon Trishes. But again, I guess that's dating back to even the Big East era where it's just a little bit different.
I'm like, listen, you've missed on a couple now lately. I mean, we brought up some of the names earlier, but even a guy who now he's on your roster in Samir Torrens, but you didn't get him. So
yeah,
it's become a trend to a degree. Now you have him now, so might be a no harm, no foul. But some of the other recruiting things I want to hit on here too, there's the news. We've brought him up a little bit. Malik Brown, Chris Bunch. Chris Bunch is going to be making that decision on Halloween, October 31st. Yeah. And then Malik Brown going to make his decision on Saturday. We got a question on from Twitter from Ryan Cuse. He asked us, to sum it up, is there going to be a ripple effect here? Like, does Malik Brown's decision on Saturday give you some sort of hint either way?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a tough one to answer. I think Malik Brown is probably going to pick Syracuse if I had to say right now. I don't want to jinx it, but I look at what else is on his list. The only other school that he has quote unquote visited, and again, maybe there was an unofficial visit, but a true visit is Virginia Tech and Syracuse. And the way that he released his top five, he's making his decision fresh off a Syracuse visit where he said glowing things. I know everyone says glowing things.
Everyone's,
we always joke about that. But I had good vibes on some of the comments. So if Malik Brown does commit, which I think is likely, maybe it does lower the chances of Chris Bunch but at the same time, Chris Bunch has probably got his school made up right now. And you would hope that the coaching staff is telling them, okay, here's what we heard from Malik and here's what we're telling you. And it's probably understood if you're a Chris Bunch.
Yeah. And listen, I don't think it's first come first serve either. I think Malik, I do think there is a ripple effect here by whatever way that this ends up panning out, because I think it's a numbers game now. I mean, you could be looking at a fourth guy here, and I think that kind of, I don't think you want to go that deep. I think I think there's a ripple effect here.
But yeah, I see.
I just don't see the point of going five and you got three guys outside that top 100. Like, it's one thing to go five. You got three guys in the top 100, maybe a top 25 guy in there too. And then you get a couple of projects. But I can't see you going five and bringing in three projects. I'd rather take something a little bit more known of a quantity in the transfer portal.
Yeah, it's just tough because rankings aren't everything. So I don't consider them projects if they're, you know, I'd rather look at their offer sheet and stuff. And I think Peter Carey's a project right now. Not so sure about the other guys. Like, Malik Brown's got a pretty decent offer sheet. He doesn't strike me as super raw when I watch his tape. But it's also, it's five in this class. They had one in the last cycle, though. So six over 2 years is not that uncommon.
But you did have, three transfers that you brought in? Now, one of them is going to be gone for sure next season. But I'd imagine, and it seems like Jim Boeheim is leaning this way as well, the transfer portal is very real. And it's something he's had a lot of success with lately. And why stray away from that? Like, if Cole Swider and Samir Torrence play really well this season, find it hard-pressed to see a situation where they don't try to use it even more.
What, five or six went out. So they kind of actually...
Right. It works both ways. Yeah. It works both ways. But I'd imagine with the success of the players that he's having from the transfer portal, that there's really no reason to not continue to use it as that sort of effective tool. But we'll get into some more hoop stuff, including some of Jim Boeheim's comments as well from ACC Media Day. He's speaking very glowingly of the centers. And two in particular, he's kind of omitting one name there. So we'll get into all of that. But first, college football fanatics, have you heard about Prize Picks? It is daily fantasy made easy. Tim and I love it, and we know that you will too. It's the leader in college sports daily fantasy, and they offer more college football props than anyone in the world, including star players from the Power Five, as well as mid-major players that you might not have even heard of. Prize Picks offers any prop you can think of, from yardage to touchdowns, even interceptions thrown. And all users that deposit and use our promo code LOCKEDON will receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Just make sure you use that promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. Pick 2 to 5 players with an over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. You can mix your sports. Soon you'll be able to mix Syracuse basketball and football, all that fun stuff. So use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals, so don't hesitate. Check out prizepicks.com and use promo code LOCKDOWN, or go to your App Store and download the app today. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. So a lot of interesting comments from Jim Boeheim. This was actually one of the funnier things I saw, too, from ACC Media Day. Did you see Buddy Boeheim dress himself up as a reporter and go try to ask Dad a couple questions? Yeah. So he had a nice little jab at him, too. He's like, I really liked That's Buddy funny. Until he became a reporter. It was something along those lines. But the big thing that he said in this entire thing was about the center position. And it was basically breaking down how he's seen a lot of really good things at the center position from two guys in particular, Jesse Edwards, Frank Anselm, and then Brahma's had his up and downs throughout camp. And I'm wondering what it's going to look like, because we saw the John Rothstein tweet from last week that said, Jesse Edwards figures to be the starting center on this team, which I think you and I would have opted to have Jesse as the starting center, but it felt like for the time being that Brahma wasn't going to lose his job because of an injury he had last year.
Yeah, well, it made me think back to, gosh, I can't remember the opponent, but he came in the second half of last year after missing some time. Maybe it was a Pitt or someone in ACC play, and he played like 10 minutes and basically fouled out right away and just looked so slow. And then we, you know, benched him for the rest of the year after that and realized that the knees were a serious issue. I mean, you hear Barama say his knee's feeling better, but even he will admit that he's behind schedule because he just hasn't been playing. And the quote from Jim where he says, Jesse and Frank have played the best in practice. They've been solid, really solid. And then he goes on to say about Frank Anselm, he's a little stronger. He understands the game better, his role better, very aggressive rebounder, rim runner. And he says, this is the one that stood out to me. He's just been different. He's been a really different looking player this year. That's Jim Boeheim on Frank Anselm.
Yeah.
So I love that. And he also said, we'll probably play all three centers. We're going to play all three guards. We're going to play all three forwards and at least eight
guys. He says
guys
it now.
What we're hearing.
We'll see.
Yes. But he says that now. And
I think the way that you just added it up, that's nine guys right there. I don't think we're going to see nine guys.
He said, quote, we'll definitely play eight guys. I don't think it'll matter who starts, particularly the forward position. I think all those guys are good. I think they can be rotated pretty freely. He also had glowing reviews about Cole Swider, saying he's the best shooter at the forward position he's ever seen. And he reminds him of Preston Shumpert in that way, which very exciting. Ooh. I know he's talked a lot about the shooting and how it's the best shooting team he's ever seen. He always makes one or two comments like that every year. And I don't know why he does it, because it feels like it comes back to bite him. Like, you know, usually we get in, we're going to play some man at this point of the season, and then it never ends up happening. But, you know, I like to hear those comments about the center position, because that's what ultimately matters. I think we have a lot of faith in what we have outside of that. Who's going to step up at the center position is the big question mark. And hearing good stuff about Jesse and Frank is really encouraging for this year, but also for the future as well.
Right. Those are young guys.
Hopefully they stay. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to. And this is where the transfer portal comes in too, right? Because if Frank's doing this well in practice and maybe doesn't see the minutes that he wants, or vice versa, and Jesse's playing as well as he is, and he's not seeing the minutes that he wants, what's going to happen? Like, is he going to transfer? Is he going to try to find a new home or something like that? Who knows? And who knows? Maybe it's a pretty even split, because at the end of the day, fouls happen. And they happen quite frequently at the center position with Syracuse. So we'll see. I'm very intrigued by how the center position plays out on this team, because Frank is the great unknown right now. Jesse's a little bit of a more known quantity. And then there's the lurking Barama Sidibe factor too.
Right. Yeah. So, and going back to that comment, when he says we have three forwards, they're all going to play. The three guards are all going to play. And then he said the three centers will probably all play. He even added John Bull and said he's getting better. He's been good at practice, which I guess he's been making his layups. Shout out to John Bull and one of our favorite videos. But, you know, you just do the simple math there. All right, three guys, three forwards are definitely playing. Three guards are definitely playing. The two or the one guy that might miss the cut, according to his comment, when he says we'll definitely play eight guys, is a center. And then you look at his original comments of, all right, Frank and Jesse have been better in practice. Is Sidibe the odd man out? It feels weird that he would be, because he's a senior, or really like a six-year guy, it feels like at this point. And he's at ACC Media Day. He's given so much to the program. He's a leader probably at this stage in the clubhouse, or in the locker room, I should say. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he is the odd man out if his knees just don't get right. But I think it's imperative that they do play Frank and Jesse the minutes they deserve this year, because they didn't really strike gold at the center position in this 2022 cycle. Peter Carey's a good player maybe down the road, but I know we all agree.
He's not playing day one.
He's not playing day one. So, all right, well, you got to look at next year. If Frank leaves in the portal because he's unhappy, we know Sidibe is definitely leaving. You're stuck with Jesse and Peter Carey, and you could argue Peter Carey is not even really a true center or what they need back there, not a big enough body right now. So I know the transfer portal's out there and it giveth and it taketh away, but you can also get it back. So I get it, but I would want them to make sure that they play Frank and Jesse enough this year so that they are compelled to come back next year.
Yeah, I'm wondering too, is it going to be like the end of the Daywon Coleman era too, where he was good? I mean, remember, he started every single game on a Final Four team the year before.
Right.
And then in comes Torian Thompson. The knees really start to go on on day one, and you just kind of see the writing on the wall. There's more center help, and you just pretty much see, okay, this is what it's going to be like. He's not going to be playing a lot, and he's not healthy enough, and he's really just a practice body at that point, which right. I'm fine with. I mean, this is, I think, the biggest misconception that Syracuse fans make. I mean, the way that you see some fans talk about Barama is like you're missing out on Tim Duncan if he's not out there. Like that could not be further from the actual truth when you watch him out there. He's not much of a scoring threat. He's a good defensive presence back there. He can rebound the ball, but it's not like he's the strongest guy out there on the court. It's not like he's the most athletic guy out there on the court. He has clear limitations as a center. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if you let some of these young Bucks kind of grow into their own, get some more game experience. And quite frankly, they're probably the better players at this point.
Right. And that's the truth of the matter. Barama has been underwhelming pretty much every time or every year in his Syracuse career, except for an 8-game stretch at the end of what was, yeah. I guess, his quote unquote junior year. I can't even remember now, but right before COVID, and when he went on a run and played really well against UNC a couple times, did it against good competition. They won a lot of those games and they were playing well as a team when he was successful and he was putting up double doubles. So we've seen it. It's just, we haven't seen it in a really long time now because he hasn't been healthy. And at this point, I don't think he's ever going to be as healthy as he once was. So I'm not really counting on much from Barama this year at the center position. And that's why I'm very excited to hear what I heard from Jim Boeheim about the other two centers.
Yeah. First time in quite some time we've been excited about centers here. So
yes.
We'll get into some more basketball stuff next week. There's little bits and pieces that come across the pipeline every so often, so we make sure to hit that every single Wednesday. Up next, though, we are going to rank the six winnable games. Where do all of Syracuse's remaining six games rank from a winnability standpoint? We'll do that in just a little bit. But first, did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, including the occasional limited time flavors? When you talk to Built Bar fans, they're always passionate about their favorites. You know, Tim and mine, it is the peanut butter brownie. And if you haven't tried them all, well, you're missing out right now because there's something for everything, something for everyone. They've got chocolate flavors. They've got brownie flavors, fruit flavors, some traditional sweet flavors as well, like salted caramel. If you haven't tried them all, get a mix box. You get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. They're all healthy for you. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 net carbs. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Get the raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, or get the mix box with whatever you like. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. This is an interesting exercise now because 6 games left on the schedule. Syracuse needs 3 wins if they want to go bowling. First, I think we start with this. Your gut right now, is this a bowl team?
Gosh, it's so tough because they're playing like one, and I do think they're going to pick off some wins even though the schedule is tough from here on out, and we've talked about that. But if I had to pick right now, knowing that they have already squandered a couple good chances at wins, I would say 5 wins is probably where they settle this year.
5 is where they settle, or is that the ceiling?
Yeah, like I think they'll win 5 games if I had 5? To pick a number right now.
Yeah, I'm probably going 4, I think. This is a gauntlet of a schedule. So here, let me lay it out for you real quick, all right? For those who don't know, home against Clemson on Friday. You're on the road to take on Virginia Tech. Then you're home for BC, at Louisville, at NC State. And you close out the season at home against Pitt. By the way, something that I also stumbled upon, the S&P Plus rankings that came out too. Bill Connolly puts these together on ESPN.com every single week. It gave a lot of credibility to what we've been saying about the special teams. Because special teams, Syracuse is actually usually like top 20 in the country.
Right.
In special teams. You want to take a guess out of 130 schools where Syracuse ranks in special teams this year?
120, 110, I'd say.
100th. So you overshot a little bit, but again,
well,
this is a unit that's usually top 20 or so in S&P Plus and carrying them. But overall, they sit at 52nd, 59th offensively, 41st defensively. So everything that we've kind of seen playing out and supporting that right now. So you want to just count these down? Well, let's start with the easiest game left on the schedule. What do you see as the easiest game on the schedule? I think this one is actually the easiest pick to make as well.
Okay. So real quick, I did see Bill Connolly said that Wake Forest only had like a 32% chance to win that game on Saturday based on his calculations, which I guess means that
he wasn't high on Wake Forest. Like I mentioned, Syracuse was 52nd. I think Wake Forest was 47th in S&P Plus.
Yeah, I guess they've been getting lucky if you go off those analytics a lot, and they are undefeated, so it takes some luck to get to that point. But anyway, that probably angers Syracuse fans because it's yet again proves that they were very close and very realistically could have won that game. And that's the thing. That's why now I look at these games. If we were ranking before last week, we probably would have put Wake Forest as one of the toughest games.
Yeah.
And they would probably be top
two of the toughest. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, I was between Pitt and BC at home, and I gave a slight edge to Pitt being an easier win, which I'm a little hesitant to say because it is the last game on the schedule. But and I'm worried that Schrader or Tucker are going to get hurt just the way that they are using them. And then by that point in the season, if we're down one of those guys, our team is really nothing compared to what it was at this stage of the season. But yeah, I think Pitt just doesn't have much of a defense. BC, we've been able to beat in the past, so you can make a case for them too.
All right, I had BC, and I thought this was pretty easy. We have a major disagreement here on Pitt. A major disagreement here on Pitt. So we'll continue
you're
to
way
go
down. All right.
They are way down the ladder for me. I think they are an actually very difficult game that Syracuse is going to have to take on here. But BC, not going to have their starting quarterback that they came into the year with. Dennis Grossell doesn't scare me a whole heck of a lot. It's just one of those teams that I think the injury bug has bitten them to the point where they don't scare me enough. And it's at home.
Yeah, I mean,
too.
They still played well, though. Like Missouri, they beat without Dracovic. Clemson, they almost beat on the road. Like they're still playing good football. And I think they've got a really good coach now, and they've settled into a good spot offensively.
Okay, so your number two is BC then, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My number two is at Virginia Tech. I just think Virginia Tech's one of those teams that they're not going to score a lot of points. It's going to, I feel like, feel very similar to that Rutgers game, which was a very winnable game for Syracuse. Like you turn it into a little bit of a rock fight, and now you give yourself Garrett Schrader instead of Tommy DeVito. I think that helps Syracuse out a little bit. Virginia Tech isn't spectacular really in any sort of regard. Now the one thing is you are on the road for this game. Going to be a little bit more difficult right that way, but that's why I have them at number two. Number three, what is number three on your list?
So I went Louisville on the road, then at Virginia Tech. Again, pretty similar in terms of Pitt BC to me on you go either way, but I just figured Louisville is an easier place to win than on the road in Blacksburg and Lane Stadium and Enter Sandman and all that. And also, just based on last week, Louisville blows a game against Virginia. Virginia Tech looked pretty good against Notre Dame last week. Maybe they're starting to find some things. I think if we had gone into last week doing this, I would have flipped those two teams, and maybe I'm just overreacting to the result. But I had those two, and then I said Clemson at home as the fifth hardest game left, leaving at NC State as the toughest game.
Okay, I've got NC State at third. They are my number three, the third easiest game, I guess you should say. I should say. Okay. On the schedule. And here's one of the reasons why. I guess I might as well reveal the rest of my list. I've got Louisville at number four, Pitt at number five, and Clemson at number six. And the reason why I have this laid out the way that I do is because I fear the offensive teams against Syracuse, because we're starting to see the defense show some of their warts right now. Like, let's be honest, the defense hasn't been overly impressive the last 3 weeks. Like, Let's say what it is. Like, they really haven't. Like, they just have not done enough. If you told me that Syracuse was going to score in the 30s these last 2 weeks, I would have sharpied them in for wins these last 2 weeks. If you told me that before the Liberty game, but look at the way it's played out. They from our expectations have underperformed these last couple of weeks. So I'm getting a little bit concerned there. And some of these offensive teams, man, I mean, they're putting up numbers on Syracuse. That's why a team like Louisville, who's slinging the rock around right now, Kenny Pickett's got a 19-1 touchdown to interception ratio right now. I mean, he's like a borderline Heisman candidate the way he's playing right now. And then Clemson is Clemson at the end of the day. I know they look down
this year.
They're
not offensive. So if you're going
to
that offensive theory.
This is a little bit different though. Defensively, they're as good as they come. I think Garrett Schrader is going to see what it's like to run into the teeth of some five stars. And I think Sean Tucker is going to see that too. And there's going to be some times where they were maybe a step quicker, step bigger, step faster than some of these other guys at Wake Forest, at Florida State, at Liberty. And these guys on Clemson are a little bit different, a little more experienced. They've played in really big games. And listen, Clemson's faults this year have not come on the defensive side of the ball. They have been immaculate there. They're like one of the top five defenses in the country. And I feel like that's going to give Syracuse some fits.
Yeah, so I agree on Clemson. Also, they're coming off a bye week. That really scares me. I think they're going to cover this game because it's 14. But I also would say that that's probably the highest spread Syracuse is going to face the rest of the year. It's tough to say right now.
When you
now
say they're going to cover, you're saying Syracuse is going to cover?
Yeah, Syracuse. Yeah. So okay. I think it's going to be closer than the spread would indicate. And when I tried to do this exercise, I thought, all right, if the spread was for this week, like Pitt at home, what would it be? I think they'd maybe be like, you know, 3-point dogs maybe at home.
BC, I'm looking at it top to bottom. How many times are they favored? Maybe once?
I don't know if they're favored the rest of the year.
I think maybe at home against BC.
Right.
And that's it.
I could see that. And they've looked really good, and I thought it was very respectable of Vegas to put the line against Wake Forest at whatever it was, 6 that it ended up being, because and they ended up covering that game. They've covered most of their games so far. The other thing about Clemson that makes me think it is slightly more winnable, now I have it 5 out of 6, is the fact that it's going to be a big crowd, you would imagine, on a Friday night, and that's probably the best dome crowd we'll see all year. But I really don't see us beating Clemson just because of them coming off a bye, them really in need of a win. I just think they're going to start.
I mean, you think Dabo's not kicking those guys in the ass this week? Like,
right. Definitely.
He knows this team gives him trouble too. Like, everything's come crashing down for him. He cannot make the college football playoff. This might be the game he wants to win most, to at least go out and prove a point against Syracuse, because it is one of the few teams that has kind of punched him back over these last couple of seasons. Like, this could be the most important game in Dabo's mind the rest of the way.
Yeah, and look, they might not be favored in any of these 6 games remaining, but they're going to win a couple of them, I would say. And the only concern I have is something I hit on earlier, but I'm just worried the Schrader or Tucker get hurt, and we look back on this season, and it's almost like one of those early Dungy seasons under Dino, where it's like, we went 4-8, but we challenged all these teams, and we probably could easily gone 8-4 if we won some of those early games and Schrader or whoever gets hurt stayed healthy. So that is my big concern right now when I look at the rest of the schedule.
All right, so to recap, my easiest game, I've got BC, and then from easiest to hardest, I go at Virginia Tech, at NC State, at Louisville, versus Pitt, and then versus Clemson. I just think the offensive teams are going to have their way a little bit with Syracuse's defense, and you're going to have to turn Schrader into a thrower at some point, which he has proven that he really can't do that. We've seen him try to have some of these comebacks, and a lot of them have come up short so far. So that is why, that's my rationale. You want to just run through your list real quick too.
So we're in a little disagreement, which I like. I got Pitt at home.
I would say a little bit. We have a lot of disagreement here.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But I guess all these games are kind of like ACC opponents. You don't really know what you're expecting. And I could see them winning. All these games are quote unquote winnable for Syracuse. It's just none of them they're probably going to be favored in. So they all kind of group into the same category. I got BC.
And guess what? My list would completely change if I saw the defense tighten its screws against Wake Forest, against Florida State. Like, if they held those teams to 21, 24 points, I'm probably completely changing how I'm ranking a team like Pitt or Louisville. But because they really haven't proven much to me these last couple of weeks, that's why I'm afraid of some of these big-time offenses coming in.
Yeah, so then I got BC at Louisville, at Virginia Tech, Clemson at home, and at NC State, which I guess NC State is the only other ranked team left on the schedule right now as it stands for Syracuse, but they're like 22nd in the country, I think.
All right, that's going to do it for us here. Give us your thoughts. What are the most winnable games? We'll tweet this out on our account, at @LO_Syracuse. Rank the most winnable remaining games. Check it out on our Twitter account, at @LO_Syracuse. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Wednesday show. Tomorrow, we're going to start diving into all things Clemson because it is Tiger Week. We do have a Friday game, so all of our bearings are thrown off a little bit. We'll get you a 2-pack tomorrow. We'll get you the mini Clemson preview and then the full thing fleshed out, DeBundo's Digits, Prop Shop, all that stuff and more. So be on the lookout for that. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Also on YouTube, even if you're subscribed on Apple, on Spotify, whatever, be sure to subscribe to the show as well on YouTube. So for Tim, I'm Tyler. We thank you for making Locked On Syracuse your first listen today. Go check out Locked On ACC because they'll be talking some ACC power rankings on today's show. So go check them out. Make that your second listen today. We will talk to you guys with the Clemson previews tomorrow.